Okay, so I'm Paul. I'm going to talk about the pursuit of quality. And the base of the talk is this word, quality, which I hate, I have to say. I'm certain if you walk around this building, there'll be posters and books and an awful lot of documentation produced which has the word quality in. But I hate using that word, and I don't use it myself. I try and avoid it because I've never met anybody who could explain what it actually means. So I want to talk about quality, but with respect to what it means to testers and real people, okay? Not theoretical and consultancy and all that other good stuff. So, and please work. Please work. Now that's cheating. That's no good. Okay, it's not going to work, is it? I'm sorry.
You just give me a sign.
Are you sure? All right. It's not going to work. Okay. Hands up. Okay, so what is quality? I'm going to sort of talk a little bit, 2 minutes on that. And I want to really, really talk about test models, which is the way that all testing is done, whether you're using automation or manually or you're exploring testing or following a script, whatever. We use things called test models, okay? And there is not enough information out there describing how we actually behave as testers. The books and the training material and the certification schemes talk about test design techniques, perhaps. But what they really ought to be talking about is test models, because that is how we think. Okay, it's closer to the way we think. So I'll give you... Oh, back. So we'll look at a couple of examples, and I'll talk very briefly about models and stakeholders. Models must be relevant to our stakeholders, to the people who are interested in what we do as testers. Okay. And I talk very briefly about some failures. I think in the handouts, it says I'm going to introduce some tragic and funny examples. A couple. Not really so funny and not very tragic, but whatever. Sir, please. I have my servant. Weather. Do you get weather in Austria? Okay. So, the weather. I mean, have you seen the... There's an analogy of... the test manager as weatherman. Okay. Well, Paul, what's the testing going to be like today? As if you control the testing and the outcome of testing, as if you control the weather. And when the weather is bad, the weatherman, oh, no, that's not good enough, Paul. You get the idea? Tester as weatherman? Rain is good for farmers, but it's bad for tourists. So what is the quality of the rain? Problem, isn't it? Wind is essential for sailors. Yeah, the wind is great today. Let's go out on the water. But the tourists, you know, their lilos are blowing across the beach. The sand is everywhere. It's terrible. It's a disaster. So what is the quality of the wind, of the weather? It's a trivial example. Okay? But you have... Quality is not a property of the system, the weather, the material, the content, the document. It's not a property of the thing under test. It's up here. Okay? So, next please, sir. And click again. Okay, so some of these things you might recognize. What is the quality of, say, a Big Mac? How many people like Big Macs? Okay, how many people think Big Macs are terrible? We had a wedding last week. Did you hear about this? I managed to sit in my study for the entire day. I didn't see a second of the wedding at all. God bless them. I wish them well. But they're no different from David Beckham and Posh Spice. You know, they're just celebrities to me. Okay, I don't care, right? How many people in the room are Apple users? Do you love using your Apple machine, iPods? I think the quality of Apple products is very poor. To me. To me. I was an Apple user for 7 years. 7 years. And I just got sick of the way that Apple could never integrate with Microsoft products. I'm not saying that because I'm at Microsoft. Okay? I'm not saying that. I got so frustrated. I have an iPod, and it's not as good as the MP3 player I used to have, in my opinion. Now, when I say Apple products are not so good, the Apple users say, you're not using it correctly. Don't you understand? Are you stupid? You know, can you not afford a good piece of technology? I would say, you have bought into the marketing. You sound like you work for Apple. When I say the quality of Apple is not so good, the Apple guys say, you're insulting my family. You know? And I think, I don't like Apple because they have a very good marketing position where they have indoctrinated people to think their products are perfect, and they are not. So are Apple products of high quality? I don't think so, but that's my view. Some people think the same. A lot of Apple users think, I'm an idiot. Fine, I have no problem with that. But you see where I'm coming from. And clicks, please, sorry. That's me. And again, please, sorry. Whatever, okay. So you get the idea. Okay, let's move on. Quality is a relationship between an individual or organization and the product itself. It's the relationship. So it takes both the product and the person or organization. So the model of quality that prevails is like if a company is a Microsoft house. Do you guys use Microsoft products?
Yes.
Okay, so when someone comes along and says, we should be using Apple products, do you get excited or do you say, go away, please? Okay, the model of quality is to do with the stakeholders. So the Microsoft view of Apple products is what the Microsoft view is. I'm not going to defend it. It is what it is. The Apple view of Microsoft products is not very good, let us say, okay? For whatever. Personally, I use Linux because it's free. It's better and it's free. Okay, so you get the idea. Next slide, sir. So, I love this. I love PowerPoint has suddenly kind of stepped up a little bit in the last version. I've been using PowerPoint for nearly 20 years. What can I say? The concept of quality and that word and how we use it and explain and articulate what it means is tough. It's the same as saying comfort or risk or facility, ease of use. These are things that are very hard to articulate in natural language. We can argue, I'm more comfortable than you because I am a tough guy. I like a nice soft bed in the morning. I don't like to sleep rough in the garden or on a mountain. The concept of comfort is the same thing. So all these words, and there are many, many more, hard to articulate. The problem we have with quality is used as a word which encompasses everything. Not only is it hard to define on a specific attribute of a system, but we use it to describe all attributes of systems. It's lost its value as a word. A bit like agile. How many people are agile? Oh, come on, but be enthusiastic, please. Agile. Okay, so I want my word back. I've been agile all my life, as I recall. I've always been a bit sort of strange. I want my word back. And that's what's happening with quality. Quality, the word quality, its meaning has been lost because it's been used as a label for almost everything good in the world. So, next slide. Models of quality and testing. Next slide. Thank you. So I'm going to talk about models and introduce the idea of models. I think these kind of pieces of text are lifted from Wikipedia, which I don't trust. It was convenient to look at models. And these are some of the types of models. And there's all sorts of things. Some you might recognize. Some of them are kind of weird and wonderful. Doesn't matter. Models are part of our life. Next slide. Everywhere. Okay, so let me use an analogy. If, and it's important I put the water there. If I were to pick up a glass of water, and I'm stood here and the water's over there, and I have to make 1,000 decisions in order to get from here to there to lift the glass. But when I look at the glass, and I use my eyes and my ears and my senses, the feelings from my muscles, I look around, and I build a three-dimensional model of the universe. I focus on this object over here. I make a beeline for it. Sorry, can I use that language? I walk to it. And as I walk, I'm getting feedback from all my muscles, and my eyes are telling me, make these adjustments, and I'm continually rebuilding the model as I walk until I pick up the glass, and I get some additional senses in my fingers, and I'm still building the model, and then I take a drink. Models allow us to do everything, but because they are so inbuilt into our heads, we don't describe them, we don't talk about them, but they are there, okay? So, and this is kind of incredible, okay? This is what the human brain is. It's just a massive, massively sophisticated machine. Next. So, what models might you be familiar with that are more explicit? The project plan. Do we all have plans nowadays? Nobody has a plan in their projects. I know, do we need plans? The plan is a model of the future. And it helps you to predict the sequence of events and how you monitor performance of those events in order to achieve a goal. Just like me picking up the glass of water. We continually review the model, the plan. We look at performance and adjust the plan. And we get closer to our goal. And we do that in a way that is so everybody in the project who contributes to the project can see, has a visibility of what is going on. So plans are a model. Another model is a document, a requirements document. The set of requirements, you know, the language that's used in a requirements document is a model of the system to be built. Now, is it a good model or a bad model? Who knows? How many of your organizations write requirements? Can I say? I mean, more than two, I hope. I'm just trying to get you involved a little bit. Maybe I won't do that anymore. But the requirements are a model, okay? When you write requirements, how often is it harder to change the requirements than to keep building software? We know the requirements are wrong, but that's okay. We'll worry about the requirements at the end. Let's build the software, get the users to check it out, and fix the bugs. The requirements aren't the goal. The software, the system is the goal. So why are we writing requirements? How many testers, I mean, those of you who actually do testing, and there was more than one, I know. Do you ever get requirements that are good requirements that are accurate, complete, concise, consistent, all these other unambiguous, all these other good things? How many people get good requirements? Two. I've got two at the front. Are you business analysts? Okay, so one at the back. Not many. Most testers complain about requirements because they're not perfect. You'll never get perfect requirements. It's impossible. I mean, the requirements are not the way to do it. Natural language is a lousy way of describing what systems do. But that's what we use. So, I don't want to dwell on this, and we all know the problems with the requirements. Another model might be user personas. Okay, do you guys use this? I think it's big in Microsoft, personas, isn't it? So a persona might be, well, we think of, developers might consider, we have a user, this anonymous, faceless thing called a user, using my wonderful software. And when we deliver that software, how many people think that actually the user might be a 16-year-old gamer? He plays with his Xbox or PlayStation 10 hours a day. How familiar is he with, and how adept is he with his fingers and a keyboard and a mouse and a controller? Compare that with a 30-year-old security hacker. Is he a user? You're damn right he's a user. How about a 50-year-old Manchester United fan. I'm from Liverpool, okay? Does anybody here support United? Oh, good. Oh, good. A 50-year-old Manchester United fan knows nothing about football and has never seen them play. Okay? Even they use computers. Okay, it's a joke. Okay? I have no offence to Manchester United. Next slide, sir. So, where quality comes from. So quality, kind of, is the outcome of a comparison. Our mental model and our experience, the reality. Quality is a judgment made on the difference between the two, or the congruence of the two. That's what quality is, I think. So the thing with mental models is they're private and internal, and you don't know how I think, and I don't know how you think. How do we share that knowledge? Well, do you remember the Star Trek? We need to do Vulcan mind melds, and how can we do that? We usually write these things down or talk about them, and we're not very good at writing things down, and we're not very good at talking either. Okay? So, however we communicate, that's kind of noise, errors in this process. So, test design is based on models. Now, whether we are talking about a set of requirements, or we're looking at the environment, or the type of user, or the way they use the software, their goal, their motivations, whatever, models simplify the very difficult challenge of testing systems. Okay, and a system to me could be a little piece of software, it could be an airport, it could be anything in between. Yeah, we test systems, we don't test software, we test things much bigger than software. Okay, so what a model does is it allows us to focus attention on things of importance to us and allows us to focus attention on a selection of attributes of software and systems. So they make our life easier. Now, we may articulate these and tell everybody and write these things down, or we might just get tapping away and just think and explore. But we're building mental models all the time. So, yes, they enable us to select tests in a systematic way. Okay, they help. So, did you move on? Yes. Yeah, thank you. But all models oversimplify. Okay, so if we go back to the weather, we could model the weather as a bucket of water, an electric fan, and an electric fire. And say, when we need heat, we turn the fire up, and when we need wind, we turn up. And we could build a computer simulation of these three things doing whatever, and say, we know how to predict the weather. It's a model. Is it a good model? Of course not. And that's the business we are in that we have to devise models which are meaningful and useful and help us to do the job of explaining what our systems are capable of. Okay? So it's a challenge. Now, most of this model making is happening in your head. As you write tests down or as you execute tests and explore. It's happening all the time. Now, the problem that we have as a testing industry is this kind of thought process is not being thought about, which drives me nuts. Testing is not about tap, tap, tap. Testing is not about handing over control to a tool. Important as it is to have tools to do regression testing, you could say that's not testing. Once you've handed over control to the tool is doing everything. I'm not doing testing anymore. The tool is doing a job for me. The thought processes are what we need to think about. So, we need to understand, before we adopt a model, will it work, and will it work for me? Will it work for my stakeholders? So, some examples. Yes, please. How many people have done ISTQB kind of training, the foundation course, that kind of thing? All the people who put their hands up are in this kind of area over here. You're all Anacon guys. Okay, but you've heard of it? You've heard of ISTQB, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So the material in those courses essentially give you some basic test design techniques, okay? Nothing wrong with them. I'm not going to criticize the techniques. My criticism is that these are the outcome of the modelling process. We should be teaching people to do modelling. And these things come out of that thought process. So we're telling people how to use tools, but not how to choose tools. Does that make sense? Is that the way of looking at it? So boundary values, yeah. These techniques, boundary values, equivalence partitions, very useful, but they're 30 years old, and kind of they relate to the old green screen era. So, remember how many people remember green screens and mainframes and all that? They're still going. The presumption, the assumption, is that the system will deal with one input at a time. It will classify all data according to some rules, which are in requirements, and then give you an output, an outcome. So it's a single kind of thread, if you like. Now, how many systems that we work on nowadays are so simple? None. It's a useful technique, but it's the most basic technique. It's also probably the most powerful. The problem we have is that requirements aren't presented in a way that make it easy to use. Requirements aren't laid out in simple ways. And we all know most systems, there's a thousand things happening at the same time. So it's a model, it works, but it's a very, very simplified model. So it doesn't cover everything. Next one, so. State transitions, another click please. Okay, so state transitions, this is not a very good example, but a state transition diagram describes the nature of the states a system can be in and the transitions between states. You get the idea. And what would testers do? They would trace paths and create tests to follow those paths. Okay? Next, please. But some systems have many, many states. How many states are in Windows? Dee 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 dee.
I haven't broken.
You haven't sort of counted recently. I mean, 50,000? I don't know. I don't know. I don't care. It's too many. Not too many for an operating system. It's too many to test. State transition works beautifully, but does it scale? Sometimes, sometimes not. The people it works for best are those. Sorry, I do need to drink. The people it works for best are those that have software which is designed on the basis of state transitions. So telecom systems, very often, telephone switches, for example, are designed using state transition diagrams. And that's using a case tool, and the case tool can be used to generate paths, and those paths can be used to generate test cases. Works very nicely. But if you don't know what states, or the states are so complex, because the states are based on many attributes, combinations of attributes, which are not documented in the way that's automatable, you're in big trouble. So how confident can we be in our models? Okay, next one, sir. End-to-end. So how many people work in banking or finance, that kind of thing? Oh, we're getting a bit more reaction over here now. Thank you, sir. Thank you, people. You are alive. Okay, here's a process. Don't read the text. It's got nothing to do with banking or finance. We invite our user community to test systems on the basis of their business process, which is a model of their business process. They don't actually do this, do they? This is a model. They don't all follow this. They sometimes jump from one box to another box, don't they? Because reality happens. But anyway, so we invite people to test on the basis of paths through their business process. So, Maestro. There we go. Very good. So we say, well, let's create a path through the business process, picking up transactions of the system as we go, and that becomes the basis of our acceptance test. Very good. Next one. How many people have used a government website recently? Oh, well, why? Did you have a good experience? Okay, so next button, please. Did you have to go through a series of pages to fill in a tax return or I don't know what? Okay, you get the idea. Lots and lots of pages to fill in. These numbers are actually from a UK website, okay? And These numbers here, the first layer, every when a user encounters the page, page one, 45% say, I think I'll go to page two. 55% say, this is a waste of my time, or I can't see because I'm colorblind and it's all in red and green and I can't tell the difference. Or I'm a 16-year-old gamer, I'm on the wrong website, I don't know, okay? Okay, on page two, 72% make it to the next page. And 48% of those guys make it. So the cumulative effect is the number of successes, 2%. Well, what's happening here? We are testing every page in isolation. Our developers are writing countless unit tests. We have system testers creating huge numbers of end-to-end tests. Page one, page two, page three. We have written lots of test automation. We can run 100,000 of these transactions, whatever. It works perfectly. And then the business guy says, well, why do 49 people out of 50 abandon the site? It's not that we're using the wrong models, we're not using all the models. Okay, so we need to model the user experience. What do people actually think of our software when they use it? It works beautifully in the test lab, but does it work in the real world? So models and stakeholders. He jumped the gun then, didn't he? Next, please. Yeah. Now, is it the testers who decide what the models are? Maybe. But imagine this. When you design a test, and let's say you go through the process of documenting things. When you design a test and you document it and you hand it over to your stakeholders, your business users or the customer or the developers who are stakeholders, if they don't understand what the model is trying to achieve, the tests that you base on that model might not be meaningful. If you think about what the purpose of testing is, it's to provide information to other people, typically other people, for them to make a decision to fix a bug, to change a design, to implement an interface, to go live into production, etc., etc. Okay? So we test to provide information to other people to make decisions. If the information you give them doesn't help them to make those decisions, the information is not good enough. And when it's not good enough, it's usually because the model is not perfect. It's a problem with the model. Testers do what testers do. If the model is wrong, it has no meaning to stakeholders. So models are critical to getting over your message in that the model has to have meaning to a stakeholder so that when you base tests against that model, they understand what the information means. So if your model is a table of risks and you create tests against that table of risks which have been prioritized, that has meaning. If you think as a tester, well, I'm going to test the things that have most interest to me as a tester, I'm just going to go tap, tap, tap and say, well, I've tested all these interesting things and here's here's the outcome, here's the results. The stakeholder would say, well, that's very interesting, Paul, but it doesn't help. Okay, so we need to engage stakeholders. Okay? Throwing 700-page test plans at stakeholders saying we're doing the best job we can, how many people do that? How many people have done that and sort of... do you see your 700-page test plans reviewed by anybody, ever? Why not? It's the most important part of your business. You know, it's a proposal for the capture of information so that stakeholders can make a very big decision. Why aren't they interested? Because it's not relevant to them. The model is wrong. Okay? So, how are we doing for... Oh, not doing too bad. I might finish by Wednesday. Measuring quality. Now, this is a bit contentious. Well, it might be. When I say it, I'm very dry today. Measuring quality feels good. How many people produce graphs and statistics, you know, from the outcome of testing? You're all lying. You all do. All right? Because it looks good. How many people count bugs? You all do. Don't you? Why not? Okay, some of you might not. You might be a bit more intelligent. I don't mean that. Measurable quality attributes, like bugs, test cases, pass rate, time to fix, all these metrics things, make us feel good because it makes us feel like we're in control. But I have to say, if the model is wrong, the things you are counting are meaningless. Counting bugs has very little meaning, because what you're actually doing, a bug is a representation of a relationship between a stakeholder and the system. If the stakeholder looks at the software and goes tap, 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 it fails my quality model, I raise an incident, a bug report, whatever. So when you count bugs, you're counting the incidents of people making judgments. So how many judgments that turned out negative have we got today? Ooh, 23. What does that mean? What does that mean? What does that number represent? It can be used to represent the number of times you've got to go through the incident resolution process. Absolutely fine. Maybe you can estimate against that as well. Is it a measure of the quality of the system? I find that very hard to grasp. I don't know. How many bugs are in Windows? I don't know why I'm looking at you. You just happen to be sat. He's the only person here I can point out and say. How many bugs are in Windows? Who knows? Who cares? You didn't say that. I'm sorry. I should not put you on the spot. We all care. You care more than anybody. Okay? Okay? Microsoft cares. I understand. But the issue is this. Is the 100,000 bugs that are in all the products of all the suppliers that we've encountered, that I use personally, I only care about 14. Tell me there's 100,000 bugs in these products, I will say, that's fantastic. Fix these 14, please. I don't care about the 99,886. Is that right? Is my arithmetic? I don't care. Okay? You get the idea, all right? It's much more subtle than just producing numbers. Numbers are great to allow you to manage the process, but do numbers measure quality? I think not, okay? Yes, please. Helping stakeholders to make their decisions is our goal. Okay. So, we need to engage with stakeholders as testers and ask, what information do you need to make your decision to promote the software into the next level, to migrate to the new platform, to go live in production? What information do you need to see me produce? My job is to give you the information you need to make some decisions. I can help you work out how we can do that. Most stakeholders would say, I don't know. You have to help them. But they have to understand what you're doing, because if you produce a massive test plan and 100,000 bug reports, they will not understand why it is important. Are we in control of quality if we measure? We're not. I've said that. I'll shut up now. Next, please. Thank you. Failures of systems, failures of models. When testing goes... Yes, please. Now you waited. Good man. Talk about some bugs. I mean, we could do this all day. We could do this all year, all our lives. How many bugs have occurred? You know, how many funny bugs? Mostly in defense, mostly American. There's quite a few European ones there as well. One of the early problems with the F-16 was the guy who wrote the software to control the release of bombs and the pods that carry fuel never realized the plane might be upside down when that software was used. But imagine this, the pilot flips the plane over, drops the bomb, and sees the bomb go bonk. So the model of software that the developers were using was, it's running on a computer. It doesn't matter whether I turn the computer upside down, does it? Wrong model. Next, please. Toyota, how many people drive Toyota Prius? Oh, come on. You're not willing to... Must be somebody. Anyway, okay. There's been a bit of problem with Toyota Prius cars, hasn't there? The brakes don't work. It seems to me, from the, and I've never seen the technical detail, but my understanding is they did not test it in a car. They can't have done. Because it doesn't work on bumpy roads. It doesn't work on ice. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, how many roads are bumpy and have ice? I mean, all cars have to drive over bumpy roads and icy roads. And there's probably other things which we don't know about yet. So if you do drive a Prius and you're embarrassed, watch out. Sell it. I won't be buying one. Wrong model. They didn't test it in a car. That's my perception of what's going on here. Next one, please. This is a few years ago now, but this is the Mars lander, which didn't land. Oh, it did land, it crashed. So the Mars lander was a satellite, and the software was written partly in America, US, and partly in Europe. I don't know who. Big companies, okay? And you're all aware of the difference between metric and imperial. Miles, kilometers. And I don't know the details, except the Americans worked in imperial and the Europeans worked in metric. And I wonder why it crashed. What went wrong there? Did they not talk to each other or something? I don't know. I don't. Next, please. Sorry. So we could do this all day. Okay? And there are some hilariously funny ones and some very tragic ones, but keep clicking, please. Right. So I'm a developer. I might test my little object here, unit testing, like the little latch that releases the bomb. It works fine for me. Next, please. This is actually a web service, but who cares? It doesn't matter. And then the next level of abstraction would be the system works end-to-end with a database, whatever. But there are stubs for the interfaces out going out. Next one, please. And there may be some legacy systems. And that's another level, another part of our model. This is a model of our system. It's an architecture. Next one, please. And then the sort of external system, the banking system, whatever. Next, please. What's missing are people. Our 16-year-old gamer, our 50-year-old Manchester United fan, they use the system differently. That's not on our architectural model. We need better models to do better testing. Please. So our test strategy, and I'm going to use these slides very quickly now. Our test strategy, if we have this kind of phased approach, and we test requirements and designs as well, we have different objectives. Okay, I won't tell you the detail. But every one of these objectives requires a different model. So to say, we are going to use equivalence partitions and boundary value analysis for all our testing, it's not only stupid, it's meaningless. Okay, we have to have better models. So, next. I said that, yep. So, a failure in testing where bugs escape into production is usually a failure in our test models. Testers do what testers do. They do the best job they can. But if their models are bad, they cannot succeed. So, it could be the model does not represent reality. It works in a test lab, but not in the real world. The scope of the model is too narrow. I'm doing unit testing. I don't care about the rest of the world. It's too narrow to be successful. The model ignores critical aspects, like we'll test this brake in the lab, but we won't test it in the car on an icy road. The scope is wrong. You get the idea. Okay, next please. So, close. I'm just about on time now. We need to understand what quality is before we pursue and achieve it. Okay. So the talk about quality at the beginning is really to say, where do we fit in the pursuit of quality? Where does testing, and I don't mean testers, testing, everybody tests. Business analysts test, designers test, programmers test sometimes, testers test, users test. Everybody contributes to this. So the way that we separate and allocate the work to people in testing is to understand what models are, what models are relevant. That's where we should be. So, testing fails because models are poor, okay? We need test models to understand quality and to behave. We need, most importantly, to understand what stakeholders want. What information do they need to make their decisions? They've decided to invest 10 million euros. What will help them make the decision to go live with the system? That's where we fit. So using models sounds technical, theoretical, academic, but it's not. It's part of how we are built as human beings. We all use models all the time. In the same way that we understand quality intuitively, we understand risk, we understand objectives. We do this all the time, 100 times a second in our brains. You don't need to go on training courses to learn how to do this. We just need to think a bit more about it. Thank you. I'm done.